Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hit 'em high, hit 'em high, hit 'em high. Can you hit 'em low, hit 'em low, hit 'em low? Your ain't got no game. I'm breaking you out the frame, coming through like a train. Looking to take over the whole world is my goal. With my unstoppable crew taking all control. You can't get none of this. We're running this. Well, take a earth shaker, 3-point gun in this. Get off the lane, I'm coming through. And if you don't wanna move, I'm coming right through you.
It's like inch by inch and step by step, I'm closing in on your position. And destruction is my mission, no. 8 is not enough, the whole squad better duck. It's like switch when I bust, now your whole crew is dust. Coming through my area, I'ma have to bury you. The real scream team on your screen scene. It's like showdown under Rago. Tell me who wanna tangle with together with Stock, the neighborhood superhero.
Came to bring the ultimate pain upon the brain, untamed. You will like it when I change into a type strange. Make low maniacal, monster in the game. And I got my eye on you, dead shot aim. As free throws keep coming down like rain. You feeling me, I'm feeling you, the monster gang. I'm telling you, pass me the rock, now I'm headed to the basket. Get up out my way, it's what you better do. My tactics is unsportsmanlike conduct, you better ask it. Don't get no better than this. You catch my drift, you get stripped by ball handlers, ruled by swag hammer. Danger, you dealing with official hoop bangers. With hang time, like a coat hanger. Jump with thunderous 360 degree tight dunks. What up, Doc? The monster funk.
Lightning strikes, the court lights get dim. Supreme competition is about to begin. Above the rim, finessing it, moves is animated. Once I get the ball in, I can't be deflated. A rugged paw, my monsters is getting money. With clicks, get the bugging, I'm snatching up their bunnies. Every step I take shakes the ground. I make you break your ankle, son, shake you down. This is my planet, about business, the best that ever done it. Can I get a witness? A cumulus cloud brings darkness up above. You in it for the money or in it for the love, MJ? 23 ways to make a pay. Lounging in the mothership back around my way. A 28 light years old. If the ref get political, dribble like Bob Dole. Am I getting lyrical? Daddy, I think so. Monster, top of flavor, fluid, no 20 floating.
Nation, what is going on tonight? We are back once again on blogtalkradio.com in another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here with you, like always, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. tonight, live and in person. We're going to have some fun. This is going to be a very interesting and probably our most entertaining show we've had up to date. The main focus is the history of the NFL draft. We're going to go back in time a little bit tonight and reflect on the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to the NFL draft. We're going to talk about some of the smart picks. We're going to talk about some of the stupid picks, some drama that went down. And one particular feud that, well, it didn't last very long, but it was one of the more interesting feuds on the history of sports television programming. We're going to reflect back on that and so much more when it comes to the NFL draft on tonight's show. And I'm excited to bring it to you. I'm just looking forward to seeing how this is all going to play out. We are just over 24 hours away until the 2014 NFL Draft kicks off tomorrow night. And we're actually going to have a 60-minute podcast where we're going to preview the draft tomorrow evening. We still don't even know who the number one overall pick is going to be. That's what makes this draft so intriguing. So strap on your seatbelts, buck yourselves up. It's going to be a wild one. I can't even begin to tell you how it's all going to play out and how it's all going to go down. You're going to have to watch it, though, and see for yourself. So let's get it going. Let's just get it going. So that being said, before we really tip things off, since tonight is the theme of the NFL draft, we have some birthdays to pass along, which have to do with the NFL. One particular birthday, this man is no longer here with us. Johnny Unitas passed away on September 11th back in 2002. He was 69 at the time of his death. He would have been 81 if he was still living amongst us. Just to give you a background on him, Johnny Unitas was a ninth-round pick. Now, back then in the days, draft went as many as 12 rounds to 14 rounds in the history of the draft back then before they changed it up to the seven rounds during the mid to late 90s. But he was a ninth round pick. He was picked number 102. He was drafted in 1955. He debuted for the Baltimore Colts in 1956. Actually was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He basically was cut before the season started. And there was some serious knocks on him that he wasn't going to be a great quarterback. He wasn't smart enough. He wasn't strong enough. He didn't have what it took. Boy, did he prove some people wrong. So he went on to the Baltimore Colts in 1956 and really made a name for himself. Throughout that time, he was a 10-time Pro Bowler. He's also a 5-time AP first-team All-Pro, 2-time AP second-team All-Pro. He was a 1957 NFL MVP. Did it again in 1959, did it again in 64, and did it again in 67. 3-time Pro Bowl MVP, the NFL Man of the Year in 1970, Super Bowl champion in 1970, 3-time NFL champion, NFL 50th anniversary all-time team, as well as the 75th anniversary all-time team, and the 1960s all-decade team. As of today, his number 19 is retired by the Baltimore Colts, and it should be. And he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1979. He finished his career with 290 touchdowns, 253 interceptions, with 4,239 passing yards, with a 54.6 percentage completion percentage, with a 78.2 passer rating. So, nonetheless, happy birthday to him, even though he's no longer here with us. His spirit still lives on amongst the Baltimore Colts / Indianapolis Colts organization, as well as football fans, period. Old school football fans who know a lot about football, who knew a lot about Johnny Unitas, and who grew up watching him. Happy birthday to him today, and may his spirit live on forever, forever and ever. From a man who's no longer here to a man who is still here and very young into his career. Happy 25th birthday to Seahawks safety Earl Thomas, who just came off a Super Bowl victory just a couple months ago, well, 3 months ago to be more exact. He was drafted by the Seahawks in 2010. He was the 14th pick overall coming out of the University of Texas. So far, he's already established himself in a big way. He's a 3-time Pro Bowl, 3-time All-Pro, a 2-time NFL Top 100 ranking. Right now, as of his career, going back to the end of last season, he finished so far, up to this point, he has 345 tackles, 15 interceptions, 5 forced fumbles, and 2 defensive touchdowns. Now, just last week, he agreed to a 4-year contract extension worth $40 million with $27.725 million guaranteed, making him the highest paid safety in the NFL. Earlier today, his teammate, cornerback Richard Sherman, he had his contract extended for 4 years, which was also, which is worth $57 million, $40 million to be guaranteed, making him the highest paid cornerback in the NFL. So it seems like the Seahawks, or the players that are still there, are getting their big paydays, and you could expect next year that Russell Wilson, the quarterback, will get his big payday. And some of the other key players on that team that have made major contributions during this team's journey to winning the Super Bowl. So he turns 25 today. This guy is still not even really into the prime of his career, but he has made a name for himself. He's arguably the best safety in the game. You could certainly make a strong case for him at that position. And he still has a lot of football left, and I'm anxious to see what the Seahawks are going to do. Because if you look at it, last year when the Ravens won their Super Bowl, they lost a lot of pieces in the offseason, a lot of major pieces, and they were not the same football team last year. What's going to happen with the Seahawks? I'm kind of anxious to see. Now, of course, they still got Sherman, they still got Russell Wilson, they still got Marshawn Lynch, they still got Earl Thomas, they still got Cliff Avril, they still got Doug Baldwin, but they did lose some pieces this past offseason. So what are they going to do? Can they bounce back? Because when you are the Super Bowl champ, everybody is coming after you. Everybody. Everybody and their mama is coming after you. And they're going to open up the season against Green Bay, so you can rest assured that's going to be a tough test for them to start off the season. Part two of the Fail Mary game that went down between these two teams on Monday night 2 years ago. We're all still talking about that game. We're all still talking about that game. We're going to be talking about that for a long time because it's one of the more controversial games in the history of the National Football League. That was actually the last game that featured the substitute referees before they brought back the original professional referees that had been doing it for a long time just a few days later after that game took place. So happy birthday to Earl Thomas. Happy 25th and many more happy returns to him. Happy 30th birthday to Alex Smith, a quarterback who once played in that NFC West, that rugged division with the Seahawks. Drafted number one overall by the 49ers in 2005, but he'll be the first to tell you he didn't live up to expectations until they brought in Jim Harbaugh as the head coach in 2011, and he went on to have his best year ever as a pro. He didn't throw that many touchdowns, but he didn't throw that many interceptions either, and he played management football, throwing just 17 touchdowns, but only throwing 5 interceptions that entire season. He only threw for 3,144 yards that season. But again, he managed the game, and he didn't make a lot of mistakes. They won a lot of games that year up until the NFC Championship when they lost to the Giants. They came up short. Alex Smith was on the 49ers team the following year, but when he got injured, Colin Kaepernick stepped in, took him all the way to the Super Bowl in a losing effort against the Ravens. Alex Smith was on that team. After that, he was traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, and he went on to make a name for himself. Now, this past season, he threw for 3,313 yards. That's actually the second highest. That's actually the highest in his NFL career. 23 touchdowns, also the highest in his career. 60.6 completion percentage. That was his second. Actually, it was his third throughout his career in a regular season. He threw just 7 interceptions in 15 games that he played. The Kansas City Chiefs had an amazing turnaround. They got off to a 9-0 start, but they came up short in the playoffs in that dramatic comeback against Indianapolis. I'm not going to put all of that on Alex Smith. I think the injury to Jamaal Charles really hurt Kansas City's chances down the stretch. But when you got a 28-point lead, you can't let nobody come back on you. You just can't do that. And I think the problem was they got a little bit relaxed and got a little bit ahead of themselves. And Andrew Luck really started to emerge and really cement himself as an upcoming elite young quarterback. And unfortunately for Kansas City, that was a tough loss. And who knows what would have happened after that game if they had won. But nonetheless, Alex Smith is 30 today. And, you know, when you're a quarterback and you get into your 30s, questions began to swarm. You know, what's going to happen in the future of this organization. So you basically saw how he got booted and traded in favor of Colin Kaepernick. He wasn't going to play the starting quarterback role for the 49ers anymore. But I think that it was the right trade for them to make, and it was good that Kansas City was able to acquire him because they needed a quarterback. They really hadn't had a quarterback in a long time, since maybe Trent Green, but they needed something, and something had to give right now. Alex Smith, as of this past season, 104 career touchdowns, 70 career interceptions, 17,593 career passing yards with an 81 career passer rating. One-time Pro Bowler last season, NFC Offensive Player of the Week back in 2012. He did it once that year. He also was an NFC champion and a two-time USA Today All-Joe team from 2011 to 2012. So, nonetheless, happy birthday to him, and good luck to the Chiefs this upcoming season. They're going to need it, playing in that division and playing in that conference especially. We also have another birthday to pass along. Leslie O'Neal, who's a former NFL player, he turns 50 today. He was drafted number one in the first round. He was drafted number eight overall in 1986, the year I was born. Pretty cool. He was drafted by the San Diego Chargers, where he spent the majority of his career. He was a six-time Pro Bowler, three-time second-team All-Pro, one-time All-Rookie Pro, 1994 AFC champion with the Chargers. They went to the Super Bowl that season, got blasted by the 49ers, but at least they got there. Two-time All-American in college at Oklahoma State. He's on the Chargers' 50th anniversary team and their 40th anniversary team. 132.5 career sacks, three career interceptions, and one career defensive touchdown. Played defensive end, and he did some nice things with those Chargers teams, but they kind of underachieved a little bit from the time where Dan Fouts was the quarterback all the way up until, you know, throughout the 90s pretty much. They didn't have a lot of team success, but they did get to the Super Bowl once during that decade, and then they just fell off the map for an extended period of time before the LT days and before, you know, Drew Brees was brought in and Phillip Rivers eventually taking over the team. But happy 50th birthday to Leslie O'Neal. He's one of those forgotten players, but he did some nice things with the Chargers, playing that position and playing as long as he did. We have one more birthday to pass along. This is a gentleman who I didn't really know much about until I was watching the NFL Network's Top 10 show, the Top 10. It was called the Top 10 Follow-Ups, basically. This guy's name is Dave Hansen. He's a running back. He turned 67 today. He played college at the University of Wyoming. He was the ninth round selection, pick number 220 overall in 1969. Back when he was with the Packers, spent a few years there. Played a few more years with the Falcons, and then finished out his career with the Eagles. He didn't have a lot of success in the NFL. He didn't play a lot of years, obviously. He only had just 4,536 career rushing yards and only 25 career touchdowns. But he was best known where, during his time with the Falcons in 1972, when he came over from the Packers, in his first year with the team, he surpassed the 100,000-yard rushing mark during the Falcons' final game of the season against the Chiefs. Okay, so they stopped the ball. They stopped the game. They give him the game ball. And on his next carry, he was tackled for a 6-yard loss and finished the season with 995 rushing yards. He didn't get a chance to carry the ball no more after that. The game was pretty much over. The Falcons season was pretty much over, the regular season. And he tried again the following year. Came up 3 yards shy and finished with 997. He missed most of the 1974 season due to an injury. And then finally, in 1975, finally did it against his former team, the Packers. He finished the season with 1,002 rushing yards and received the NFL Comeback Player of the Year award. After that, he finished, played one more season with the Falcons, went on to the Eagles, never really achieved much, but, you know, that's something to be a little bit proud of. So, turned 67 today, and happy birthday to him. Nonetheless, happy birthday to him, and happy birthday to a lot of players today in the NFL. Whether they achieved or whether they didn't achieve. Actually, we got one more birthday to pass along. I gotta say, one more. happy birthday to Ronnie Harmon. He's 50 today. He didn't play a lot of years in the NFL. He was a first-round pick. He was the 16th pick overall, coming out of the University of Iowa. He was drafted in 1986 by Buffalo, played there until 1989. He was a one-time Pro Bowler. The running back had 582 career receptions, 8,850 combined rushing and receiving yards, and 34 career total touchdowns. Spent some time with Buffalo, spent some time with San Diego, spent a couple years with the Houston/Tennessee Oilers, finished his career in 1997 with the Chicago Bears, but not much to cheer about. Didn't do a whole lot in terms of his career, but at the same time, he basically did some things, and you know, nonetheless, he turns 50 today, so a happy birthday to him. We're going to take our first break. Right now, you can tune in over to TNT. We got game two between the Washington Wizards and the Indiana Pacers. The Wizards won game one in solid fashion. Game two is happening right now. The Pacers are up. And later on tonight, we have game two between the Clippers and the Thunder. The Clippers won game one, and they won big, with Chris Paul having such a big game that he had. Game two tonight. First of all, congratulations to Kevin Durant winning the MVP award, regular season MVP award for the first time in his career. Gave an emotional speech yesterday. It was really heartfelt. I was really, really happy for him. Now you got to deliver tonight, because you cannot afford to be 0-2 against the Clippers. You just can't do it. They're riding on some momentum right now, and if you're OKC, you have to win tonight. If you're Indiana, you have to win tonight as well to keep it going. So we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk some basketball. We're going to be talking about the NFL draft all night tonight. We're going to reflect. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're approaching 7:30 the time, and we're on air to 9 o'clock. We are taking calls at 347-327-9586, and we just reflecting on the draft tonight. But before we get into that, we got some NBA news to pass along. Congratulations to the Spurs general manager R.C. Buford for being named the Executive of the Year. He's been doing it for a long time with this organization. He first became a member of the Spurs in the summer of 1988 as an assistant coach on Larry Brown's staff. Spent four seasons there as an assistant. And then he became the number one assistant with Larry Brown for the Clippers. Popovich was then hired him as the Spurs head scout in the summer of 94, has been with the team since. So how about that? So basically he and Popovich have been together for two decades now, and he wins the executive award, and he deserves it for what the Spurs did. They finished the season with the best record. They won last night. I'm going to get to that game shortly. But congratulations to him, though. Congratulations to him. And I was talking about before the break, the Indiana Pacers, they're playing right now as we speak on TNT, the first of the doubleheader tonight in the playoffs. They're currently up. The game is actually tied at 23 at the end of the first quarter. They're going to have to go the rest of the way, however long they're alive in the postseason. They're going to have to do it without Andrew Bynum. About 7 hours before tonight's game, team officials said that he would miss the rest of the postseason. It would not be with the team. He had been battling a sore right knee even before he came over from Cleveland. They brought him in to basically back up Roy Hibbert. But I haven't recalled seeing him play in the playoffs. Now, they didn't play him at all against Atlanta. But looks like he's not going to be in the future plans with this team going forward as far as their quest to trying to get to the NBA Finals and win the championship. So they're going to go without Andrew Bynum. And that's too bad, because if you think about Roy Hibbert's recent struggles, they could certainly use him a little bit. But he's no good to the team with a bad knee. And that knee problem has been bothering him since going back to his final year with the Lakers. Think about it. He was never the same after that. He hadn't been the same since. And I wasn't sure if he was going to help this Pacers team. Look at it that way. I wasn't sure if he was going to come in and provide anything for them, you know, because he hadn't really been playing. So they're going to have to go the rest of the way without him. And for Andrew Bynum, what's going to happen the rest of the way for him, for the rest of his career? What's going to happen with him? So speaking of Roy Hibbert, hopefully Roy Hibbert gets off to a good start tonight. Hopefully he's playing well. As of right now, before the second quarter started, he actually leads the Pacers in scoring right now. He actually leads the team in scoring with 7 points. How about that? This guy's already had three scoreless games in the postseason. He's 3 for 3. He's got a couple rebounds, a blocked shot, playing well, made 1 of 1 free throws. Okay. Not bad. Good. Good. That's the Roy Hibbert that the Pacers need right now to make a difference. The second quarter just started. The Wizards are currently up right now, and they're going to need Roy Hibbert completely, 100%. They need him to be the guy. So basically from one current Pacer to a former Pacer, we also have other news to pass along. Yesterday, the Golden State Warriors decided to fire Mark Jackson, Mark Jackson being a former Indiana Pacer, former Utah Jazz player, former New York Knicks player. They fired him after three seasons with the team. He made the playoffs the last couple years. But basically, and I'm going to tell you why they made this move. He didn't get along with the front office. I don't care what the general manager, what the owner, or what anybody in the front office said. Mark Jackson did not see eye to eye with the Golden State Warriors front office. It's as simple as that. And at times, you wonder what the relationship was like with the players. I often wonder, did he always hold guys like Stephen Curry accountable when he was making mistakes? I think he treated him too much like a son. And didn't single him out if or when Stephen Curry made mistakes or made some bad crucial plays. And that was starting to speculate, you know, with those rumors and what was going on and things of that nature. But this is basically a mutual parting, it seemed like. But if you're Mark Jackson, where do you go from here? If you're the Golden State Warriors, where do you go from here? Who's going to be the elite candidate for your coaching vacancy? Now, there's talks that they could bring in Steve Kerr, even though Steve Kerr is basically most likely entitled to getting that New York Knicks coaching job because of Phil Jackson being in the front office. Stan Van Gundy, he's also been a name that has popped up in talks, but he hasn't really spoken publicly about wanting to come back and coach again. Then you got Kevin Ollie, even though he's a coach at the University of Connecticut. He hasn't ruled out the possibility of coaching in the NBA. He basically said, you never say never. So there's going to be some enticing offers. Lionel Hollins is out there still. You know, I want the Pistons to take him. George Karl, he's still out there. So even Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson can come back and coach if he wants to. Why not him? I think it'll be interesting to see how he can relate to the young players. So basically, simply put, the Warriors are going to have some enticing options as far as who their next coaching, as far as their next coaching vacancy. So they're going to have some enticing options, and that's a wonder. Where are they going to do, and where are they going to go from this position? If you're Mark Jackson, who would you want to coach? Do you want to go and take that Knicks shot? Because, you know, he's got ties to New York. He played there. He was supposed to be the guy. Rumor had it that he was going to be the guy to coach the Knicks team a few years ago before they brought in Mike D'Antoni. So is he going to have that shot now? Remains to be seen. But there's definitely going to be some options for him out there, some serious options for him out there. So I guess this is a decision that the Warriors felt that they made, that they felt they needed to make, and they made it. It's as simple as that. So just a quick update right now. The Wizards are up still by the Pacers. They're up 29-28 that game, still in the second quarter. Second quarter actually just kicked off a few minutes ago. Right now, Roy Hibbert is playing the best basketball so far this postseason. He still leads the team with 7 points right now, and this is the game that the Pacers need to win. You don't want to be a team that's 0-2 and you got to go on the road for the next two games. You don't want that to happen. The Pacers need to win tonight. Now, this is the first of the doubleheader on TNT. The second game that's going to happen tonight will be between the Clippers and Oklahoma City Thunder. And OKC needs to win. Chris Paul went bonkers in game one, scoring 30 points, made 8 3-pointers. Eight. He had never made no more than 5 in a game. He made 8 in game one. Pretty impressive if you ask me. And I also look at it like they got to find a way to do something about him. Now, Kevin Durant and Russell Wilson both played well. They both got their numbers in terms of points, but they had no defensive answers for Chris Paul in game one. And that was a serious problem. That was a real serious problem. So they're going to have to adjust. And they're also going to have to adjust against guys like Blake Griffin, who also scored 23 points in that game one victory. Other guys are going to have to step up for OKC. It's as simple as that. It can't just be Durant and Westbrook. All right, Serge Ibaka had 12 points in game one, but they're going to need more from him on offense and defense. He only played 26 minutes in that game. Kendrick Perkins only played 14 minutes. Dabo Sefolosha, he only scored 5 points. Reggie Jackson only scored 4 points on 1 of 8 shooting. Caron Butler only scored 3 points on 1 of 7 shooting. Derek Fisher, even though he's up there in age, he only scored 4 points. Jeremy Lamb, 8 points on just 3 of 8 shooting. Basically, they're going to need more contributions from these other guys. Terry Jones, Nick Collison, Steven Adams are going to have to step their games up. It's as simple as that. It can't just be Durant and Westbrook. Now, another reason why I think the Clippers had so much success is because they were able to shoot the 3-ball effectively. Chris Paul went 8-for-9. Jamal Crawford went 3-for-6. J.J. Redick went 1-for-2. Jared Dudley went 1-for-2. Matt Barnes hit a couple 3-pointers. They shot 15 of 29, and Chris Paul was the catalyst. Meanwhile, OKC shot 9-for-28 from three-point range. Yeah, that's not going to get it done. The Clippers overall shot 55% in the game. OKC only shot 46%. 9 times out of 10, you're going to win those games. You're going to win those games. Even though they only had 31 rebounds, OKC had 47. But when you can shoot that effectively, you're going to win a lot of games. It's as simple as that. Chris Paul played phenomenal, 32 points and 10 rebounds. So OKC's going to have to adjust. It's basically the bottom line. They're going to have to adjust, and they're going to have to get some of these other guys in the game and get them more involved. So game two, I'm expecting OKC to win because I think they're going to rally behind Kevin Durant, who gave such an emotional speech when he won his MVP award yesterday. It was so profound. It was so heartfelt. There were some tears in that audience and tears among some of the players on the OKC team as well as the coaching staff. It was really, really strong felt. And I think that's something that's got to carry over into tonight. I'm expecting an emotional performance from Kevin Durant. I think he's going to score more than 25. I think he's going to score probably 40. And I think he should try and score for 40 tonight in order to deliver and let people know, hey, I won the MVP award for a reason. This is my trophy. Now, I got to be the guy to go out there and deliver and be the guy that everybody talks so much about this year and over the years. This is my moment to shine, and I got to do it tonight, plain and simple. So with that being said, I think OKC will tie up the series tonight before they venture out to L.A. for games 3 and 4. Game 3 will be Friday on ESPN, and game 4 will be Sunday on ABC. Interesting games. Interesting games. So OKC needs to win tonight, period. Getting into the NFL draft, man, the whole industry just started back to the 1930s. The first draft took place in 1936. It took place in Philadelphia at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel on February the 8th of that year. 99 names were written on a blackboard in the meeting room for which the teams could choose from. The list was created from either print media sources, visits to local colleges, you know, basically what you see a lot. Now, at that time, the draft lasted for 9 rounds, okay? The first player ever selected in the draft was a guy named Jay Barwanger. He was a player that went on to make history because he was drafted number one overall and the first ever draft pick. I mean, that's something special in its own. So, and he went on to, even though he never played pro football, but he still made history because of that. He won the Heisman Trophy Award in 1935. His career, his life came to an end back in the summer of 2002. He died at the age of 88 with lung cancer. But he did work briefly as a sports writer, but he never spent time in an NFL game. So in a sense, you could say he was an NFL bust, but nobody really labeled him that way. Even though he won the Heisman, he was the first overall pick in the 1936 draft and the first ever player taken coming out of the University of Chicago. But he did make history, and because of that, the draft went on to become a historic and traditional event. But when you talk about the draft, you always talk about, you know, who rose to the occasion? Who's the guy that lived up to expectations? Who's the guy that really went on to make a name for himself? And there were so many guys to me that were drafted number one overall that I really felt really, really made names for themselves. You could say guys like Bubba Smith, O.J. Simpson, Terry Bradshaw, Jim Puckett. We can go even further with that. Earl Campbell, Irving Fryer, Eli Manning, Russell Wilson right now because he has a Super Bowl. Even Andrew Luck, so far he's living up to expectations. Orlando Pace, a great offensive lineman. Peyton Manning, of course, and even though Eli was traded, but he was still number one overall pick. And he went on to win 2 Super Bowl rings. Peyton Manning went on to 3 Super Bowls, won one, established himself. had the best season of his career last year. You can also say guys like just so many other names. John Elway, you can't forget him for what he meant. Bruce Smith, all-time NFL sack leader. Bo Jackson, he was a highlight, even though he didn't play that many years. Troy Aikman, even though his rookie season was disastrous, you can't take away what he did for his career. Russell Maryland went on to establish himself as a phenomenal defensive lineman. Drew Bledsoe played exceptionally well, was an elite quarterback until he got injured, and Tom Brady had to step in. So the bottom line is there have been guys who lived up to expectations. However, there were also other number one overall picks who never really lived up to expectations. Jamarcus Russell is at the top of the list. I don't care what anybody says. He hasn't really done it, okay? David Carr, Tim Couch, and to Tim Couch's defense, he went to a brand new Browns team that re-entered the NFL in 1999. He had no talent to work with. He didn't have no support. He didn't have great coaching. He didn't have anything. He had no help. So I can't blame him for not living up to career expectations because he played phenomenal at the University of Kentucky. And there was a reason why the Browns took him. They took him because they needed a quarterback. The quarterback is always a highly viewed position. That's the position that if you're a franchise, that's the position that you need to take. That's the position that you need to work on. And I think because of that, I don't know what Tim Couch would have looked like if he went to play for another team, a team that had already been in the league. And I think that was an issue. Now, Kajana Carter, the knock on him was he was injured too much. He got injured in his very first preseason game. And it was unfortunate, very unfortunate for him. And then you got other guys such as Vinny Testaverde, who did some nice things, but he played for a lot of teams in his career. Jeff George, pretty much the same thing. Steve Ettman. I don't know about Steve Ettman because – you know, he didn't play a lot of years in the NFL. He didn't. He didn't play a lot. But expectations were high, and they said, okay, this guy was probably going to be the next Bruce Smith, or he was on the verge to becoming maybe the next Reggie White. Never really lived up to those expectations. And unfortunately, injuries started to... to derail him. He suffered a ruptured disc in just his third career season, and that injury led to eventually him never really being the same player again. And this happened on a collision with a teammate, even though he continued to play. This happened in 1994, by the way. But unfortunately, he was never really the same after that injury. And he was forced to retire a lot sooner than he would have liked to have played. And so, unfortunately, his career came to an end, and that was it for him. So there was a lot of busts. And now, there's a lot of busts that guys that weren't the number one overall pick, but they were still maybe a top 10 or they were still a first rounder, and they didn't live up to those expectations like a lot of people would have expected them to. There's so much about the NFL draft that just makes you say, yeah, there's a lot of history that comes with that. I think so many players were drafted on the first round. They were drafted later, and they went on to make a name for themselves. It's as simple as that. Okay, for example, Tom Brady was drafted, and he never, he didn't have a great workout at the combine. You know, he was drafted in 2000. Okay, now let's kind of look back on Tom Brady's career just a little bit, prior to the NFL. Okay, let's just kind of look at it a little bit. Now, he didn't have a great workout. I remember watching him in those khaki pants, and I remember him with the long white tee running. He didn't run very fast. He didn't have a great workout. And a lot of people say, is this going to be the guy? This is going to be the guy that's going to be, you know, a future Pro Bowler, a future Super Bowl winning quarterback. Nobody didn't know what to make of it. He was the 199th pick overall. And there were a lot of quarterbacks that were taken ahead of him. For example, Chad Pennington. He was the first round pick that year of all the quarterbacks. But he was at, he once won the comeback play of the year, but he never really lived up to expectations because he was beat up a lot, and when he played, he didn't always play that well. He wasn't the quarterback that threw for a lot of yards, and his career ended a lot sooner than he would have wanted to. You had Chris Redmond. Chris Redmond never really did anything for the Ravens or for the rest of his career. And then there was just other guys that, you know, you saw them play. Did they really live up to expectations? Not really, because there were so many different guys, unfortunately, and you basically saw how that turned out. So guys like, Mark Bolger was drafted that year. You also had guys like Spurgeon Winn, but, you know, a lot of those guys really didn't pan out. Mark Bolger went on to become a Pro Bowler. Then you also had guys like T. Martin and, again, Spurgeon Winn, you know. And then you're like, okay, who are these guys? You know, are these guys going to go out and really do something? And most of them really didn't, unfortunately. So we're going to talk more about the NFL draft. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to update. We got some NHL playoffs to talk about a little bit, some MLB, and more of the draft, which is our main topic of the night. This is the Rockets Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We will be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're almost approaching the 8 o'clock hour. Currently, right now, just to give you a quick update, the Pacers and the Wizards are tied at 41. The game is almost approaching halftime. Got about a minute and a half left to play in the second quarter. Roy Hibbert is getting off to a solid start, playing a lot better than he has so far this postseason. Also, quick update in the NHL playoffs. Last time we had a couple games that took place. The Boston Bruins losing in Montreal to the Canadiens, 4-2. The Canadiens are up 2-1 in the series. And Chicago getting shut out in Minnesota, 4-0. The Blackhawks are still up 2-1 in the series. Right now, we have one game that's happening tonight, and that is between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers. Right now, the Pittsburgh Penguins are up 1-0. They also lead the series 2-1. So if they win tonight, they are in total control, as they should be. Tomorrow, the playoffs continue in the NHL. Basically, we got a rematch between the Bruins and the Canadiens. If the Canadiens can win tonight, they will be up. If the Canadiens can win tomorrow, they will be up 3-1, and they'll have some big momentum going their way. We also have the Anaheim Ducks against the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings are currently up 2-0. Boy, they are the hottest team in the NHL right now, by far. Winning the final four games in that series against San Jose, now winning two in a row against Anaheim, and they're at home for the next two games. They can complete the sweep and really go forward with some serious momentum. At this point, I'm actually going to pick them to win the Stanley Cup because I think they're hot right now. They opened up my eyes. They're making a believer out of me. So we got those two games that will be taking place tomorrow evening. Tonight we got the doubleheader. We got the second doubleheader between the Clippers and OKC. Last night we had Miami Heat. They beat Brooklyn for the first time all year long. And they beat them soundly, too. It was a runaway, actually. It was a score of, and it was actually kind of embarrassing a little bit, but it was a score of 107-86. San Antonio put the hurting on Portland, winning 116-92. Those two games took place on TNT last night. Tomorrow night, ESPN will be hosting the playoff games. Game 2 between Brooklyn and Miami at 7 p.m. and Portland and San Antonio at 9:30. And that OKC Clippers game will take place at 9:30 tonight on TNT. The Wizards in Indiana, they're getting ready to go into halftime. The Wizards are currently up at the moment. Pacers need to win. And Roy Hibbert's going to have to play even better in the second half of Indiana to have a chance. They're going to have to get some stops because the Wizards can score. They got guys that can score. They got scoring options. Indiana's got to find a way to apprehend that and keep Washington from really getting, having their way on the offensive side of the ball, period. So just getting back into the talk with the whole NFL draft, and I'm just going to reflect more on some of my favorite moments. One of my favorite moments took place, and this is such a classic. It happened 20 years ago, all right? and I was watching this on the NFL Network. They had it on the NFL's top 10 draft moments. It actually came out earlier today. I had it recorded on my PBR. But it was so funny because it was so unexpected. This went down back on 1994. The Indianapolis Colts, all right, they had two picks in the first round, all right? They had two picks in the first round. The Indianapolis Colts did. The first pick they took and it was actually kind of funny. They had two picks, both in the top five. They had the second overall pick. They took Marshall Faulk out of San Diego State. You know, Marshall Faulk went on to establish himself probably the best all-around running back in the history of the NFL. Up there with Roger Craig. Just phenomenal talent. You know, winning the Super Bowl and everything. Being a key contributor to the Rams. Did some nice things with the Colts, too, by the way. Went to the playoffs with them a couple times as well. But three picks later, they took Trev Alberts, linebacker out of Nebraska. Now, just to give you a quick background on Trev Alberts, there really isn't a background to give you. he only played 2 years in the National Football League. He played 29 career games and only started seven. 69 tackles, only 3/4 career fumbles, and only one career interception. He went on to establish himself a little bit as a broadcaster. Even though I didn't necessarily look at him as a great broadcaster in the NCAA. So, because of that, there's no, I mean, I know he's still doing college football broadcasting, but he's not doing it national-wide, I guess you can say, because I don't pay attention to the guy, and I don't think there's a lot of people who have. But anyway, okay. Mel Kiper, who is supposed to be a draft expert, most people will say, some people will tell you yes, some people will tell you no. Basically, Mel Kiper flat out called the Colts basically a laughing stock in the NFL for making that particular pick, because he felt that they should have took Trent Dilfer, who ended up going the next pick to Tampa Bay. But let's be honest. Let's be honest about this. Now, Trev Alberts never did anything in the NFL, but do you think Trent Dilfer would have did anything better than the Colts, with the Colts, than what Jim Harbaugh did? I don't think so. I look back on it, I still think that Jim Harbaugh was a much better quarterback than Trent Dilfer, period. Now, I'm pretty sure some of y'all are thinking, well, didn't Trent Dilfer win a Super Bowl? Yes, he did, but it was the Ravens defense that won that Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer just happened to be the starting quarterback. Trent Dilfer took over about halfway through the season over Tony Banks, a guy who was, if not the same quarterback as Trent Dilfer, was a lot worse. He never really was a winner. He never really did much in the NFL throughout his career, and I don't think he played that long either. The bottom line is, okay, was that I don't think that Trent Dilfer would have did that much with the Colts, but if they only had just one quarterback on their roster, then maybe they should have went after him. Maybe they should. Trent Dilfer coming out of Fresno State. But it makes you wonder, because there was only one quarterback, well, actually two quarterbacks that were taken in that year's draft. The first was Heath Shuler, who went on to become a bust because he never really lived up to expectations, unfortunately. But let's be honest. You know, looking back on that 94 draft, they produced some players, but did they produce a lot of players? Not so much. Not a lot of big-time explosive players. Yeah, they had Willie McGinnis, they had Brian Young, Sam Adams, Aaron Glenn, Joe Johnson, former defensive end of the New Orleans Saints, Todd Stussy, fantastic offensive lineman, Tim Bowens, a good defensive tackle, played for Miami. Johnny Morton did some nice things in Detroit as a wide receiver. Greg Hill was a solid running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. William Floyd, a contributor as a fullback slash tailback for the 49ers. Trey Johnson, Isaac Bruce, those guys were second-round picks. Kevin Mawai, Charlie Garner, Larry Allen. I mean, there were some really nice pieces. But not too many guys that went on to become, like, seriously household names in that year's draft. Now, getting back into the Mel Kiper, Bill Tobin feud, you might have seen this happen. If you haven't watched it, please, I urge you to go to YouTube and look it up. Just look up Mel Kiper, Bill Tobin. It's on there. It's probably on there more than once. More than one video clip is on there somewhere. You can check it out probably on Dailymotion, Metacafe, Vimeo, whichever. But I highly suggest you look on YouTube, because it's definitely there. I was watching a video with them not too long ago, about a couple days ago exactly. Mel Kiper basically criticized the Colts organization for taking Trev Alberts. Alright? He felt that Trent Dilfer would have made more sense. So he basically said, and I quote, "That's why the Colts are the laughingstock league. That's why they're picking first every year instead of battling for the Super Bowl like most other teams in the National Football League." Bill Tobin, who was interviewed by Chris Mortensen, comes out moments later and basically has that famous line that he starts out with. Who in the hell is Mel Kiper anyway? You hear that so many times. It's the classic line, and you just hear it over and over again. It's such a classic thing to talk about. So after that, he goes on and says, and I quote, I mean, here's a guy who criticizes everybody, whoever they take. In my knowledge of him, he's never even put on a jockstrap. He's never been a player. He's never been a coach. He's never been a scout. He's never been an administrator. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. Mel Kiper has no more credentials to do what he's doing than my neighbor. And my neighbor's a postman. And he doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL. Whew. Well, how about that? How about that? Now, think about this for a second. Bill Tobin was a fiery guy at times, you know, and that piece right there certainly defines who he was. But Mel Kiper didn't back down from what he said, and neither did Bill Tobin. But Bill Tobin, I will say, he had the guts to say what a lot of general managers would have loved to have said about Mel Kiper's credentials, whether he has lack of or whether he has a lot more. Well, he basically said what a lot of GMs and a lot of executives and even owners and coaches were thinking. And let's be honest, there are some people that to this day still don't respect Mel Kiper for basically putting out his mock draft and changing it up and feeling who that team should take or who that team shouldn't take, you know, because of his lack of credentials, whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is, Bill Tobin said what he said. He didn't back down from it. He hasn't backed down from it. And I don't blame him. You know? Because let's face it, Mel Kiper hasn't been 100%. He hasn't been. He never will be. I respect Mel Kiper for his view, his point of view. And I respect Bill Tobin for doing what he did. Now, Bill Tobin made the right pick with Marshall Faulk, even though he didn't necessarily he didn't necessarily make a lot of right choices, obviously, Bill Tobin. And he didn't last that long as a coach general manager. He got fired in 1997, was replaced by Bill Polian. Bill Polian, later on, helped take the Colts to the Super Bowl, and they won it, you know, for the first time since they beat the Cowboys in Super Bowl V. But basically, Albers is certainly considered the draft bust with just 4 sacks in 3 seasons in the NFL. So that tells you everything that you need to know about Trev Albers and his career as an NFL player. Now, there were notable undrafted players that season, in that year, that went on to become household names. Kurt Warner, Rod Smith, DeMarco Farr, Shelton Quarles, Dwayne Carswell, Matt Joyce, Chris Bonio, who was a place kicker, Robert Griffith, the cornerback from Minnesota, just household names. Jeff Garcia has some solid things he did in the NFL. Jeff Wilkins, former place kicker, Jay Bellamy, Walter Rasby, James McKnight. You know, some of these guys, they went on and did some solid things. Not a lot of them did a whole lot of great things, but a lot of those guys, especially Kurt Warner and Rod Smith, you know, played on Super Bowl winning teams. DeMarco Farr, same thing. Shelton Quarles, same thing. So, you know, there were some things. There were some things. Now, Marshall Faulk, Larry Allen, you know, 2 Hall of Famers who came out of that draft. I expect Kurt Warner to be a Hall of Famer down the line. I don't know about Rod Smith, but who knows? We'll see what happens. But, yeah, that was just such one of my favorite moments ever. And it's something that it stays with you so many times. Now, another one of my favorite moments was, okay, this was a classic situation, and this happened with the Minnesota Vikings. It started back in 2002. They had a draft issue, okay? First of all, Mike Tice was named a head coach just a few months before the draft started. Now, this is such an interesting situation that took place with them at the 2002 NFL draft. Okay, first of all, the Vikings had a chance to go after Ryan Sims, the highly touted defensive tackle out of North Carolina. They were slated to take him, but Kansas City made a trade with Dallas, so they hurdled over Minnesota. Kansas City ends up taking Ryan Sims. And because of that, the Vikings didn't turn in their card pick early. Now, let me get this straight. There's 15 minutes on the clock. You couldn't register a pick in 15 minutes? Seriously? I don't understand that. You have an entire offseason to know who you want. You should never, ever, ever blow that opportunity because you don't have your card turned in on time. That should never, ever, ever happen. Okay, now I'm going to tell you something else. Unless you have the number one overall pick, you are supposed to have an option A, option B, and an option C through an option Z, okay? That should never, ever happen. And it happened to them twice in back-to-back drafts. It happened again in 2003. I couldn't believe it. I seriously couldn't believe it. It was just so ridiculous. Okay, the Vikings, okay, in 2003, the Vikings were, they basically had their draft. They were basically in a position to make a draft. Okay. They had, originally they were supposed to have the 7th overall pick. Okay. They were apparently attempting to consummate a trade within their 15-minute time allowance expired. So the Jaguars, Jacksonville, was the first team to pounce them. They turned in their card. They took Byron Leftwich right after the Vikings' time elapsed. Basically, the Jaguars had their eyesight set on Byron Leftwich, so they ended up taking him. So next thing you know, the Panthers, they end up deciding to do the same thing, too. They take advantage and hurdle over themselves. They take offensive tackle Jordan Groves before the Vikings recovered. Now, they end up taking Kevin Williams. Now, Kevin Williams panned out. He became, he went on to become a 6-time Pro Bowler, played 10 years with the team, a 5-time All-Pro, NFL 2000s All-Decade Team, 463 tackles, 60 career quarterback sacks, 5 career interceptions, and 7 career forced fumbles. He played this last year with Minnesota. He was recently let go. So he's right now currently a free agent and actually still looking for a team. And he's still out there in the free agent market, so maybe somebody might consider bringing him in. So the bottom line is, and here's the thing, the Vikings got a little bit lucky because Byron Leftwich and Jordan Groves didn't exactly pan out much. Jordan Groves played 10 years. He went to the Super Bowl in his first year with the Panthers. They almost pulled off the upset over the Patriots. But he was only a 3-time Pro Bowler. He was on the all-rookie team in 2003. But he'll probably be the first to tell you that maybe he didn't necessarily pan out as much as he would have liked to. Even though he played 10 years, in 10 years, that's prototypically long for an offensive lineman. He actually announced his retirement just earlier this year. He played a long time, though, but I don't know if he was elevated as one of the greatest offensive linemen of his era, his generation. Some people will probably say that he is, but, you know, there was a lot of bad years in Carolina, though. But they did have some years where they went to the postseason, including last year. Did some things, but I look at it like, if that's the guy that the Panthers wanted, then that's who they got. If that's the guy that the Vikings didn't want, then okay, whatever, you know. But let's be honest, there were a lot of players in that 2003 draft that really didn't live up to career expectations. And please, you do not have to remind me. Charles Rogers, that's all you need to know. Number 2 overall, coming out of Michigan State, still staying put, home, with Detroit, born and raised in Saginaw, and I'm thinking this guy is going to be the perfect fit for this team. No. His first career game, he caught 4 passes for 38 yards and 2 touchdowns. Okay. But he actually got outshined by Anquan Boldin, who went on to become a household wide receiver. It was a total disappointment. They spent a lot of money on this guy. At the time, it seemed like the right pick. They had him elevated as the next Randy Moss and the next Terrell Owens. But this guy, in his first year, he broke his collarbone. The following year, they draft Roy Williams, who ended up becoming a bust, too, even though he went to the Pro Bowl once, but he was still a bust to me. Charles Rogers, in that first game of the 2004 season, breaks his collarbone, misses the entire season. And, boy, I was ticked. I was ticked. I was really, really ticked off. So, anyway, next thing you know, he gets suspended the following year in 2005 for a third violation of the NFL substance abuse policy. And as a result, the Lions filed a grievance claiming that his drug suspension violated the clause in his contract, which would mean he would be obligated to return $10 million of the $14.2 million the Lions gave him in bonuses. Okay. This guy failed so many drug tests every year at Michigan State. And then he ended up getting cut the following year when Rob Marinelli was hired as the new coach in 2006. He worked out for a few more teams, but they opted not to re-sign him. And he still ended up getting into more trouble, getting arrested over and over again, possession of marijuana, testing positive for Vidocaine. This guy was just trouble. Just so much trouble. Drugs, females, whatever you want to think about it, it was just so much trouble with this guy. Carson Palmer had one good season in 2005 with the Bengals. He was taken number one overall in the 2003 draft. Didn't play his rookie season, came over and took over in 2004. But he never really lived up to expectations. Dwayne Robertson, defensive tackle taken by the Jets? No. Jonathan Sullivan, defensive tackle taken by the Saints? No. Jimmy Kennedon, Ty Warren, Michael Haynes, defensive end, Jerome McDougal, defensive end, Bryant Johnson, a wide receiver, Kyle Bowler, Rex Grossman, even though he went to the Super Bowl with the Bears, but did he really live up to expectations? Heck no. William Joseph, Kwame Harris, Andre Wilfort, Sammy Davis, the cornerback, Nick Barnett, Boss Bailey. Oh, my God, don't even remind me about Boss Bailey. These guys never really lived up to expectations. Guys like Nnadi Asamoah, Willis McGahee, Larry Johnson, the running back, taken out of Penn State, Troy Polamalu, Terrell Suggs, Marcus Trufant, Andre Johnson, the third overall pick, Terrence Newman, those guys went on to establish themselves as Pro Bowlers. And some of those guys established themselves better. Terrell Suggs won a Super Bowl. Marcus Trufant, he went to a Super Bowl with Seattle. Willis McGahee did some nice things with Buffalo, but really came over to Baltimore and established himself. Really established himself as a back. Spent a few years there, spent a couple years in Denver. Played last year in Cleveland. Right now he's still a free agent, so he's out there in the free market. Dallas Clark did some phenomenal things, was one of Peyton Manning's favorite targets throughout his time in Indianapolis. But the bottom line is, what Minnesota did was just crazy. They were lucky that they were able to get Kevin Williams. I don't know if that was the guy they had their sights set on, but that's a clear reminder. Turn in your draft card, okay? Don't do what the Vikings did those two drafts in a row. Know who you want. Have options. Make sure you know for sure who you want to take. And if that guy is taken before you, then have a backup plan. Period. And it's simple. So, that's the bottom line. It was just crazy, though. Just crazy. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to reflect back more on the NFL draft. When we come back, there's going to be some MLB we're going to update. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. My, 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 my.
my baby, what a lady, girl.
Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're almost approaching 8:30. We're on the air till 9 p.m. tonight. We're taking calls at 347-327-9586. What is your favorite draft moment, good or bad? Was you happy that somebody turned out to be a bust? Was you happy that somebody turned out to be a sensation in the NFL? Legendary status? Elite status? What's your favorite moment? Did it involve the player getting picked? Was it a fiasco that went down? Feel free to call in and talk about that. In the meantime, before we get back and before we continue, I did promise that we was going to talk some baseball a little bit. We got some baseball games currently in progress as of right now. A few of them to be exact. Right now, and just to update some scores, we had some games that already ended earlier today. We got the Kansas City Royals actually shut out somebody. Say what? They shut out the San Diego Padres to nothing, recording 14 hits to San Diego's 8. So San Diego had as many hits as Kansas City had as many runs. And they also had 3 errors, so that didn't get the job done, unfortunately. The L.A. Dodgers losing to Washington 3-2. Steven Strasburg going 3-2, getting his third win of the season. Rafael Soriano getting his seventh save. Dan Heron got his first loss. He's 4-1 now of the season as a starting pitcher for the Dodgers. Arizona, the D-backs beating the Milwaukee Brewers 3-2. Bronson Arroyo gets his third win of the season. He's 3-2. Willie Peralta is now 4-2. Addison Reed gets his 10th save of the season. The D-backs record twice as many hits as the Brewers did, 14-7. The Pittsburgh Pirates beating the San Francisco Giants at home 4-3. Jared Cole, 3-2 of the season, getting his first win. The Pirates recorded 12 hits, the San Francisco 7. The New York Mets losing in Miami to the Marlins 1-0. Steve Cishek got his third win of the season. He's 3-1. Carlos Torres got his first loss of the season. He's now 2-1. The Seattle Mariners beat the Oakland Athletics 6-4. That game lasted 10 innings, even though Oakland recorded 12 hits to Seattle's 8. Yorvisman Medina got his second win of the season, 2-1. Ryan Cook got his first loss this season. He's 0-1. And Fernando Rodney, who I remember playing in his days with the Tigers, glad he's gone, actually, got his ninth save. That's interesting. The games that are currently in progress right now, that was the first of a doubleheader between the Seahawks and the Mariners and the Athletics. They're playing another game right now. They're currently scoreless in the bottom of the third inning. We got the Tigers coming off a big win last night. Phenomenal, just phenomenal. They play great. They've been playing great lately, currently on a 7-game winning streak and 9 of their last 10 overall. They're currently up on Houston, the Astros, 2-1. That game, the third inning just ended. They're getting ready to go into the fourth inning. St. Louis is up on Atlanta 5-1 in the middle of the fourth inning. And Cleveland is up 2-1 on Minnesota in the bottom of the fifth. Cincinnati up 2-0 on Boston in the fifth inning. That fifth inning actually just ended, getting ready to go into the sixth. Toronto up 1-0 over Philadelphia. That game's in the sixth inning. Baltimore up 2-0 over Tampa Bay in the bottom of the fourth. The Cubs over the White Sox. Battle of the Chi-Town Bays. The White Sox are up 1-0, recording two hits so far. That game's in the bottom of the first inning. They actually have two runners on right now with two outs. And Colorado is up 2-0 on Texas at the top of the second. And later tonight, we got the Yankees and the Angels at 10:05 p.m. Vidal Nuno against Hector Santiago, who's 0-5, looking to get his first win of the season. Nuno is now 0-0. Remember the 1999 draft? Remember that? Very interesting draft year, wasn't it? Very. Remember the name Ricky Williams? Yeah, that's a name that people should remember. Ricky Williams is actually retired. It's actually his second retirement. He retired after the 2011 season with Baltimore. Played a few years with the Saints. I'll get to that in a second. Had some interesting years with Miami. I think he had his best career run with Miami in 2002-2003. Had that unexpected retirement in 2004. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody, including me. I saw that. You remember when ESPN, well, and they still do this. They always have, like, on ESPN, ESPN2, they always have news and scores, you know, posted at the bottom of the screen. It showed the NFL, Dolphins running back Ricky Williams retired. I was in college at the time. I couldn't believe it. Are you serious? Are you serious right now? I couldn't believe it. I had just graduated from high school at that time. It was during the summer. I was just sitting at home watching one day. I'm like, are you serious right now? Unbelievable. Unbelievable that was. Basically, what went down was, and this is so funny. Okay, Mike Ditka. We all know who Mike Ditka is. We've known him for a long time. Mike Ditka was the Saints coach around that time. And he orchestrated the biggest draft trade in the history of the National Football League. The reason why I say it was the biggest draft trade was because he traded all of the Saints picks that season. The Saints only had 6 picks in that entire draft. I mean, that's not a whole lot, but, you know, that's 6 draft picks that you gave away for one guy. Seriously? They sent those picks to the Washington Redskins for the 5th overall selection, which they used to take Ricky Williams out of Texas. Okay. Good for them. Ricky Williams ends up getting traded 3 years later to the Miami Dolphins. He basically got dethroned in favor of Deuce McAllister. What does that tell you? Right. Yeah, of course. Now, that draft was an interesting one because I talked about Tim Couch and how Tim Couch is taken number one overall by Cleveland. And that in that draft, Cleveland coming back to the NFL after being out for about 3 seasons. Donovan McNabb was the 2nd overall pick. Went on to become a Pro Bowler, went to a Super Bowl with the Eagles, was traded later in his career to the Washington Redskins, played for the Vikings, but didn't do much for them. Now, Donovan McNabb, as soon as he gets his name called, was booed heavily by Eagles fans. Booed heavily. And it's always funny because I'm like, okay, why would the Eagles boo him? You don't even know how this guy's going to sign. He could be the guy that you need. Because I honestly felt that the Eagles needed a quarterback at that time. That was the issue with them. They went through guys like Rodney Pete, Bobby Hoynes, Ty Detmer, then later on his brother Coy Detmer. And none of those guys really helped the Eagles get over the hump. Yeah, they went to the playoffs a few times, but did they do for their team what Donovan McNabb did for the Eagles? No. Donovan McNabb went on to become a household name for the Eagles and was one of their more elite quarterbacks basically for about a good 8-10 years, I would say. Now, here's the thing. He was taken, and look at it this way. Out of all the quarterbacks that were taken in the first round, Donovan McNabb was actually the only quarterback that truly panned out, okay? Truly panned out. Achilles Smith was taken right after Donovan McNabb. He was taken by Cincinnati with the 3rd overall pick. Total bust. Total bust. Didn't have a great football IQ. Wasn't very skilled at the position. He didn't play that long in the NFL. Seriously, he finished his career with only 5 career touchdown passes and 13 career interceptions. Barely thrown for over 2,200 passing yards. A 46.6 career completion percentage with a 52.8 passer rating for his career. Yikes. Yeah, that's pretty bad, ain't it? Yeah, I would say that's about as bad it can get. So you had that situation, and let's be honest, a lot of players that the Bengals took in those drafts around that time didn't pan out. Jonathan Carter, Peter Warwick, oh, God, don't even remind me. Even Carson Palmer only had just 1 good season. Now the Bengals are trying to turn the corner with guys like that they drafted A.J. Green and Andy Dalton. They're playing better than some of those recent picks. Chad Johnson was the only guy that actually panned out as far as being taken in the earlier years with the Bengals. But anyway, Edgerrin James was the next pick. Now, there was a lot of debate going on between who's going to be the better running back in the NFL between Edgerrin James and Ricky Williams. Most people said Ricky Williams, but a lot of people said Edgerrin James might be a better selection if you're the Colts. Because the Colts, they were talking that they possibly would take Ricky Williams. They already said Peyton Manning the year before. They already had Marvin Harrison. But they went on ahead and took Edgerrin James, who went on to become a Pro Bowler, went on to establish himself as one of the more elite running backs, but unfortunately, injuries kind of derailed him, and he only played 10 years in the league, finished his career with the Seahawks in 2009, but he was a 4-time Pro Bowler, he was the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1999, 2-time NFL Rushing Champion in 99 and 2000, he did more with his team than what Ricky Williams did with the Saints, or the Dolphins, for that matter. Now, he goes on to the Arizona Cardinals in 2006 and ends up just taking a brutal beating, never really the same back. But look at it this way. He wasn't the first running back to leave one team that drafted him and go to the Cardinals and become a star. Emmitt Smith was the first. But the bottom line is Edgerrin James was a phenomenal back with the Colts, especially those first 4 or 5 years he played with them. I mean, he is putting up big numbers for them. Big numbers. So Ricky Williams, the Saints, they trade up for the Redskins. The Saints, they end up basically drafting all the guys. Here's the thing. Do you think the Saints, do you think, because the Redskins ended up having the seventh overall pick, two picks after the Saints did. Do you really think the Redskins would have taken Ricky Williams? I doubt it. They already had Stephen Davis. Stephen Davis went on to become a Pro Bowl running back that year. They didn't really skip a beat with the guy. Okay? The Rams had the sixth overall pick. They went on and took Torrey Holt. First of all, they already orchestrated a trade with the Colts for Marshall Faulk. That's what led the Colts to draft Edgerrin James. Okay? So, it's not like the St. Louis Rams is going to pick Ricky Williams. He would have been right there for the Saints to take him at number seven. I really feel that way. So, to me, that was just all wasted on behalf of the Saints, giving up all your draft picks and giving up half of your draft picks for the following year's draft to the Redskins. Now, I said this before and I'll say it again. There is no player in the National Football League that is worth an entire draft. Now, you're going to trade your first and second overall pick, okay? Maybe a third, and a teeny bit maybe a fourth. But you do not give up your entire draft for one guy. It's going to hurt you. It's really going to destroy your organization, period. And I think that was the biggest mistake that the Saints could have made. Now, if you're the Redskins, you get all these draft picks, you better start doing something with those draft picks. Now, they drafted Champ Bailey with that seventh overall pick. Champ Bailey is going to be a Hall of Famer. But Champ Bailey only played just a few years in Washington. It was with Denver where he went on to really establish himself as a Hall of Fame-esque type of quarterback. Okay? That was the thing. That was the thing. So, I'm thinking, okay, the Redskins got all these picks. You should work with those picks. Apparently not. No championship since around that time. Not a whole lot of division titles. I don't understand it. I seriously don't understand it. And so because of that, I felt like the Redskins missed out on an opportunity. I felt like the Saints missed out on having additional draft picks because they needed all the help they can get. And then Mike Ditka had that classic post-game rant when they were 2-7. And he ended up being fired after that season. And it's funny because the following year they bring Jim Haslett as the head coach. Aaron Brooks eventually takes over as the starting quarterback. They got guys like Joe Horn and got guys like Joe Johnson who he already had on their team, Leroy Glover. And they end up going on to the playoffs. And they beat the Rams in the first round that season, winning their first division title for the first time in a long time. Some people would say, oh, okay. But after that, they started to falter a little bit, and you saw what they looked like after a while because of not having a lot of draft picks to build their franchise around and to build around the team, the organization, to keep the team from reaching elite status. They didn't reach that elite status until 2006 when they brought in a whole new coaching staff, a new quarterback in Drew Brees, drafting Reggie Bush, already having Deuce McAllister, and already having receiving options like Devery Henderson and Marcus Colston next to Joe Horn. So I look at it like, okay, I think both the Saints and the Redskins were at fault because, you know, it took a long time for the Saints to finally get over the hump. And for the Redskins, they kind of been that in-and-out organization. They make the playoffs maybe one year, next year they don't. But they don't get over the hump like they're expected to. They're still trying to figure it out. Even though they got RG3 and they bring over pieces over the years as free agents, they're still trying to get over the hump. That tells you everything right there. But that was an interesting moment there because I'm thinking, really? Really? You're going to trade all those draft picks for one guy? And I'm pretty sure if the Saints knew that Ricky Williams was eventually going to be traded and that he was eventually going to do that retirement and leave to get addicted to marijuana and yoga, I don't think they probably would have drafted him. And those are the only two tailbacks, Ricky Williams and Edgerrin James, that were drafted in the first round. The next running back that was taken was Kevin Faulk, who was in the second round. He was the 46th overall pick. Kevin Faulk was just a valuable piece for the Patriots, more in the passing game. He didn't get a lot of rushing opportunities. He wasn't always a starter. And, you know, he was just a big part of a team that did some things, though, you know. But I'll give him props for being on a team that won Super Bowls. He was a contributor. Certainly he was a contributor. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to wrap this show up eventually. And we're going to look forward to this year's draft. And we're going to talk about a few more busts. I'm just going to throw some names out there and put some guys on blast because that's what I do on this show. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is 8:45 p.m. We're still reflecting on the NFL draft history a little bit, kind of taking it back to the old days and some of the bizarre moments, good, the bad, and the ugly. Before we continue with that, we've got about 15 more minutes left of airtime. We're still taking calls at 347-327-9586. Again, that's 347-327-9586. Just to give a quick update to that Wizards-Pacers game, they're still in the third quarter. The third quarter is about to come to an end shortly. Indiana's up 65-60. Got about a minute and a half left of third quarter action. Just to give you an update on Roy Hibbert's performance, he's got 24 points, y'all. He's leading everybody with 24 points. 8 of 11 shooting, 8 for 8 on the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 2 block shots, and even an assist. How about that? In 25 minutes. 25 minutes of action. This is what the Pacers needed. You can rest assured that Paul George and David West, they took them aside and say, look, we need you, man. We need you to come alive for us. And we need you to produce, okay? And so far, so good. This is his best performance so far this postseason. And probably his best offensive performance for the first time in about 2 months. Good for him because he needs this to rebuild his confidence. Certainly he needed this. So with that being said, the Pacers are still up, and they need to win tonight. And if they win tonight with Roy Hibbert having a big game, this will go a long way for this team. And, you know, they can carry some momentum going into Washington for games 3 and 4. So getting back into the whole draft history, I'm looking forward to this year's draft because I hope that none of these guys, I seriously hope, even though I'm not too big a fan of guys like Johnny Manziel and Jadeveon Clowney, I hope that those guys don't turn out as bust, because I'm going to tell you right now, they're all going to interest a lot of money. And a lot of money is going to be invested into them regardless of whichever team drafts them. Okay? So because of that, they better produce. And think about this. There's going to be more media scrutiny on these core brand of players than there ever has been, because the media spotlight was on them in college. Jadeveon Clowney, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Sammy Watkins, Justin Gilbert, Mike Evans, who was catching a lot of Johnny Manziel's passes. These guys are all going to have the spotlight on them. They already had the spotlight on them. They're going to have a bigger spotlight on them now. And I seriously wish every single one of those guys the best of luck. You don't want to end up like a Ryan Lee, Lawrence Phillips, Tony Mandarich, Andre Wadsworth, Mark Sanchez, Roderick Buckley. I'm just saying, Matt Leinart, Vince Young. I'm just throwing names out there, man. I'm just throwing names out there. David Klinger, Andre Ware. You don't want to end up like that. Mike Phipps. I'm just throwing names out there. Those are the guys you don't want to end up like, as far as the NFL career, as far as playing the game of football and playing and trying to play one, trying to live up to expectations. Statistically, you don't want to be like those guys. Hopefully, they don't end up that way. I'm seriously hoping that they don't. And so because of that, expectations are going to be even higher on these guys. A whole lot higher. So that's the way I look at it. I'm going to just reflect back. Okay, let's talk about Tony Mandarich for a second. Tony Mandarich was taken back in 1989. He was selected by the Green Bay Packers. He was the second pick overall. Troy Aikman was the number one overall pick by the Cowboys. Of course, Troy Aikman went 0-11 his rookie season. But look what happened to him after that, though. Okay? And again, just like Charles Rogers, another guy drafted second overall. Well, Charles Rogers came behind him, obviously, but a guy drafted second overall coming out of Michigan State, expectations. This guy was built as the best offensive line prospect ever. And he is certainly one of the biggest draft busts in NFL history. Let's reflect back on that a little bit, okay? Let's go back to just the first round. Look at the guys who were taken that year. Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders, Steve Atwater, Andre Rison, Eric Metcalf. I mean, come on. Come on. Look at what those guys became. Those guys went on to become established household names. Some of those guys went on to win championships. And then guys like Donnell Wolford, Trace Armstrong, Jeff Lagerman, Wayne Martin, those guys went on to become at least Pro Bowlers. Bobby Humphrey, you know, who was a supplemental draft pick that year. Steve Wisniewski, Carnell Lake, Daryl Moose Johnston, Robert Massey, Wesley Walls, and those are second-round picks. Those guys went on to become Pro Bowlers. Okay, but just in that top five, though, Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, and Derek Thomas. Wow. Wow. And you know what's funny? You know what's funny, though? Deion Sanders didn't play a lot of years in Atlanta. That's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing. Deion Sanders played 4 years in Atlanta, ended up getting traded to San Francisco. Well, actually, he signed on to play 1 year with San Francisco. That was probably his best year in 1994, which is crazy, extremely crazy. Actually, yeah, it was 1994. 49ers went on to win the Super Bowl that year. He had arguably his best season in terms of productivity. That year with San Francisco, he had 6 interceptions, returning for NFL best and a then NFL record, 303 yards and 3 touchdowns. 2 of his interceptions that year were returned for a gain of at least 90 yards, making him the first player to do so in NFL history. And did I mention they went on to win the Super Bowl with San Francisco? Goes to Dallas midway through the following year, wins another Super Bowl. So that tells you something right there. Derek Thomas, God rest his soul, 7 sacks in 1 game, which was a record at the time. He died in 2000, played 10 years, but he could have played a lot longer. He could have played even longer than that. 9-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, 3-time second All-Pro, 7 first-time first-team All-AFC, number 58 retired, 7 sacks. 7 sacks in 1 game. And that was a game that they lost against the Seahawks at Arrowhead Stadium on Veterans Day, 1990. He could have gotten 8, but ironically, it was a sack that he didn't get when he tried to wrap up Dave Craig and couldn't. Dave Craig eluded him, he was blitzing him, threw a touchdown pass, Hail Mary in the red zone that the Seahawks caught, and they won. How about that? How about that? That was just amazing. Just amazing what they were able to do. So as we come to an end, at the Rocket Sports Breakdown, I just want to say thank you to everyone who tuned in. Really appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it. Tomorrow night, we are going to be back on air again. At 7 p.m., we're going to do another hour, a 60-minute podcast. Looking forward to it. It's going to take place. The draft is going to take place tomorrow evening. at the Radio City Music Hall in New York. If you're in the New York area, please go check it out. Go there. It's free. It's free to get into. Go there. Have a great time, you know. I think you'll have fun. I seriously think you'll have fun. So go ahead and do that. Seriously, go ahead and do that and just have a great time. Enjoy yourself. You know, have fun. Have fun. Just have fun. Just seriously have fun. It's going to be big. Who's going to be taking number one overall pick? Who's going to be the number one overall? So we're going to preview the draft tomorrow on the Rocket Sports Breakdown. So please come back with us tomorrow night. It's going to be popping off. The draft is going to start at 8 o'clock. The show is going to start at 7, the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Please come join us. Come join us. Yours truly will be back on stage again next week. Wanted to devote a lot of time to the radio network this week. We might even do another show over the weekend just to follow up and do a recap of the draft. So stay tuned for that as well. So we're going to do another podcast over the weekend. So please be on the lookout for that. Stay tuned. We're also looking forward to getting back into filming. Got some projects getting ready to come up. Might do a project this upcoming weekend, filming a music video. Got two other movies I'm going to be doing this month. Looking forward to it. So shout outs to everybody that's out there doing their thing in the industry, whether you're a comic, you're a model, you're a poet, an actor. Keep doing your thing. Talent, non-talent related positions, keep doing your thing. God bless every single one of you in your future endeavors. And tune in with us. We'll be back on air again tomorrow night at 7 p.m., an hour leading up to the draft. Please come on back and check us out. We're going to preview the 2014 NFL draft, and, you know, we're going to have some fun. So this is Rocket signing off on the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Till then, we'll see you in about less than 24 hours. Take care of yourselves and get ready for a power trip. Ish is about to go down. We'll see y'all tomorrow night. In the meantime, take care and good luck to all your teams tonight and tomorrow.